Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Quantum Intellectual Property 2021 half-year results call. At this time, all participants are just in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation today, to ask a question, you'll just need to press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. And just please be advised that today's call is being recorded. But without further ado, I'll hand the call over to your first speaker for today, CEO and Managing Director, Craig Dower. Thank you, and please go.
Thank you, Miles. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Craig Dower, the CEO and Managing Director of the Quantum Group, and I'm joined here today by our CFO, Martin Cleaver, to update you all on our FY21 first half results. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Our investor presentation and results materials have all been loaded onto the ASX website. Martin and I will be speaking to the investor presentation this morning. So moving to slide two on the structure of this presentation, I'm going to speak to sections 1, 3, 4, and 5, and Martin will take us through the detail of our financial results. If we could move to slide 5, business highlights. This has been a strong first half performance. Our people have performed exceptionally well during a highly disrupted period, and I want to thank them all for their commitment and professionalism throughout. More than half of our workforce is in Melbourne, which experienced one of the strictest lockdowns on the planet. It lasted for 111 days. Likewise, in Malaysia, there have been two separate and stringent lockdowns which have impacted all of the country, especially in KL, where our team is. The word resilience has been used a lot over the past year or so, but I think Melburnians and Malaysians personify the term. During this period, we've been able to grow our revenue, grow our earnings, and continue to drive strong cash flow across the group, across our patents, trademarks, and our legal businesses. Whilst patent filings across the industry in Australia were broadly flat, we grew our market share slightly. As we've outlined in previous presentations, whilst filings are important and can be an indicator of future revenues, they only represent about 15 to 20% of our revenues at any given time. As you will see, our revenue performance has been strong in all service lines during this first half period. Like many Australian companies, we've experienced some FX headwinds in the first half, which impacted earnings, but our results prior to FX were very pleasing. It's been a strong first half performance by any measure, and I want to thank all of our people, our board of directors, our group executive, our principals, all of our professional staff, and all of our support staff. It's been a huge team effort during a very challenging period. Thank you. I'm pleased to advise that our board has agreed to pay a dividend of 4 cents per share, fully franked, which is up 21% on the prior corresponding period, and is a continued vote of thanks to the continued support of our shareholders. We continue to invest in our people and our clients. You may have seen stories of some professional services firms directing their staff back to working full-time in their offices again. We won't be taking that approach. We're continuing to embrace a more flexible mix of work arrangements, with our people starting to return to some days in the office. We expect this to level out to around 3 days per week, with some added flexibility to avoid peak hours on public transport where necessary. We see this as an opportunity, and we intend on continuing to explore the range of options that were forced upon us initially through COVID and have now presented us with some new ways of thinking about what a new normal might look like. Our people have responded wonderfully to these new arrangements, and we will continue to learn and evolve this over the months ahead. We're also investing in a new way of driving client engagement through a proactive feedback and client listening program, a focused approach to client account planning, and through seeking ways of delivering deeper client insight and value. We're working with a market-leading global firm to implement this new platform, which is a mix of skills development, tried and tested methodologies, and tools and technology. We think it will further increase the value that we deliver to clients, as well as to drive business growth across Quantum. We are also making great progress on many of our key business transformation activities, including technology modernisation and potential acquisitions. I will touch on each of these in further detail in the presentation. We now have in place our core team and capabilities to deliver a successful and transformative set of business initiatives over the next 2 to 3 years. Moving on to slide six, the financial summary. Martin will take us through the detail on this in a moment, so I will just touch on a few of the highlights here. Our revenue or service charges, as we call them, were $46.6 million, which were up 4.0% on the prior corresponding period. Our operating expenses were up 3.6% to $33.8 million, and our EBITDA before FX was up 6.6% on the PCP to $14.5 million. Our statutory net profit after tax was up 36.4% to $6.0 million. And our operating cash flow was up 61.4% to $9.2 million. I will leave the rest of this to Martin, who will take us through the full detail of our financial results in a moment. Moving to slide seven, business overview. This slide breaks out our business across service lines, patents, trademarks, and legal services. As you can see, we've had solid growth across all three service lines over the past 6 months. Again, the majority of our business continues to be in patents, where service charges were up 3.2% to $31.9 million. Patents continue to be the engine room of our business, and the breadth and depth of capabilities across the group is a real strong point for us. In our trademarks business, our service charges were up by 3.9% versus PCP to $7.9 million, again highlighting the strength of our trademark services offering. DCC continues to be the number one firm in Australia in terms of corporate trademark filings and continues to hold market share where some other firms have fallen away. And finally, our legal business had a very strong first half, up 7.9% on the prior corresponding period. DCC Law continues to be one of the preeminent IP law firms in Australia. This is a very pleasing set of results and reflects the hard work and professionalism of all of our people across the group. That it happened during COVID with major lockdowns in both Melbourne and Malaysia is doubly pleasing. I will now hand to Martin Cleaver to take us through our financial results in detail. Over to you, Martin.
Thanks, Craig, and good morning, everyone. Turning to page nine, this shows the statutory and underlying profit and loss statement for the half year. Note that, thankfully, this is the first reporting period that we've had the AASB 16 lease accounting in both current and prior periods, which makes comparison easier. In summary, the profit and loss shows top-line service charge growth of 4% on PCP and EBITDA before FX growth of 6.6%. As Craig has said, in the context of COVID, remote working and FX headwinds, this is a very pleasing outcome. Notably, the service charge growth is across all product lines, patents, trademarks, and legal. Again, very pleasing in the current environment. Included in the service charge result is a contribution from the Cotters business acquired in May 2020 of $900,000. This impact was more than offset by FX headwinds of $1.1 million, as the AUD appreciated by almost 4 cents against PCP. As you would be aware, almost 50% of our revenue is billed in US dollars. Operating expenses for the half grew 2.4% against PCP. Employee costs increased 2.1 million or 8%. This was due to three main factors: an increase in corporate headcount, as had been previously flagged, contributed an additional 500,000. The new corporate roles are supporting the key strategic initiatives of transformation and M&A. Secondly, the addition of the Cotters business increased staff costs by $800,000. And thirdly, there was an increase in the provisions for employee leave of $800,000 due to minimal leave being taken during COVID. Other expenses decreased by $1.4 million or 34.1% due to the reduced travel and marketing spend as a result of COVID. The above movements produced an underlying EBITDA before FX for the half year of $14.5 million, a 6.6% increase on PCP and a $0.2 million increase on the immediately preceding half. The strengthening AUD resulted in a $1 million FX loss for the period, compared to a $0.2 million gain in the PCP, but in line with the loss in the second half of FY20. The FX loss reduced the underlying EBITDA to $13.5 million against a PCP of $13.8 million, a drop of 2.2%. Statutory NPAT for the half was $6 million, a 36.4% increase on PCP and a 20% above the second half of FY20. This has given the scope to increase the interim dividend by 21% from 3.3 cents to 4 cents at a payout ratio of 82% of NPATA. The EBITDA margin after FX on service charge revenue was 29%, slightly down from the 30.8% in PCP. However, on a pre-FX basis, the margin improves to 31.1%, ahead of PCP of 30.4%. Turning to slide 10. This shows the cash outcome for the half year. Cash from operating activities was $9.2 million, 61% above the prior year of $5.7 million. The improved result was largely due to two factors. Firstly, included in the prior period was $1.3 million of one-off retention payments to vendor principals. And secondly, a cash saving of $1.4 million in the current half by settling the employee share trust contributions from a share issue rather than purchasing shares on market, as has been done in the past. Capital expenditure outlays of $1.2 million relate to the purchase of laptops for all staff to facilitate remote and flexible working during COVID and going forward, plus the capitalisation of software development costs as part of the transformation program. A larger cash balance of $6.9 million was maintained at half-year end, partly due to keeping loan balances stable, i.e. no paydowns, during the bank transition process, which I will talk to shortly. Moving to slide 11. This slide shows that the group's balance sheet remains strong with capacity for future growth. There have been no material movements from 30 June. The net debt level of $17.2 million is consistent with the $17.4 million at 30 June at a gearing ratio of 18.9%. The leverage ratio is at 0.6 times. New banking facilities were negotiated during the period, increasing the group's funding capacity from $55 million to $60 million. The banking covenants under the new agreement are broadly in line with the previous covenants, and the facilities are for a three-year term. The debtor book remains high quality, and to date, there has not been any increased incidence of bad debts due to COVID. Provision balances have increased, largely due to the previously mentioned increase in employee leave entitlements, as minimal leave was taken during the period as a result of COVID. A significant portion of this is expected to reverse in the second half as COVID restrictions begin to ease. Finally, turning to slide 12. This slide contains the statutory to underlying profit reconciliation. It shows the one-off items that have been added back to the statutory EBITDA of $12.8 million to arrive at the underlying EBITDA of $13.5 million. These items relate to, firstly, the one-off retention payments made to vendor principals in the prior year being amortised over 2 years for accounting purposes. Secondly, external one-off transformation costs that were incurred to develop the initial business case. And thirdly, external M&A costs, which are at a lower level this period, partly due to the addition of internal resources. I'll now hand back to Craig to cover the market and business overview.
Great, thanks, Martin. So I'm going to cover the slides from 13 onwards, which will give you a bit of a sense of movement across the service lines and geographies. Moving to slide 14. For the next section, as you'll see, and we talk about this each time we update our results and talk to investors, the numbers can bounce around a bit period on period, as you'll see. On slide 14, patent applications are one indicator of future period service charges. You'll see Filings across the group versus PCP were down slightly, 1.6%, but up 8.7% on the last half-year period. Australian patent applications, which are 58% of the group's total, were stable on PCP and were up 6.0% on the second half of FY20. Asian patents, which are now about 15% of the total group, were down just over 5%, mainly associated with lower Malaysian applications, which I'll talk to in a moment, versus a record PCP. However, again, if you look at the second half of FY20, we're up 14.2%. The rest of the world applications, which are about 23% of group total, were down just over 5% versus PCP, but were up 10.2% on the second half of FY20. And PCT applications, 4% of the group total, were up 10.3%. We move to slide 15, which looks at patent applications across Australia. You'll see the overall market in Australia was down by 0.6%, whilst our Australian patents were flat on PCP and were up 6% on the second half of FY20. And as you'll see on this slide, it really shows overall that over the past four or five periods, patent filings in Australia have remained relatively stable or flat, and Quantum has either held or gained some small market share depending on the period. We currently hold around 15% market share across the group. As Martin said, COT has contributed about 5% of Australian patent applications in the first half, and the COTIS team have settled in well into their new role within the Quantum group. Moving on to the next slide for Asia, we did experience a downturn in Malaysia in the first half, although, again, this was comparing to a very strong PCP for our Malaysian business. In the June quarter of last year, Malaysian GDP dropped about 17%. I think that was one of the largest GDP declines across the region, and that had a flow-on effect into the first half as well. But we've had a secondary lockdown in Malaysia in recent times as well, not quite as stringent as the first that they had earlier in last year. But again, we're starting to see some returns to normal business activity levels in Malaysia, and our team is happily working from home at this point in time. Singapore continues to present growth opportunities for us, and we're pleased with the way the team is performing there. As you can see, they showed growth of 5.5% versus the PCP, and we're up 16.6% on the previous half. Asia remains an exciting growth market and is a key part of our acquisitions focus, which I'll speak to in a moment. Moving to the next slide, 17, on trademarks. Trademark filings across the group were down just over 12% against PCP and up 10.5% on the previous half. As you saw earlier, our trademark revenues were up 3.9% on PCP, and so filings only tell one part of the picture. And as I said before, DCC retained its number one position in terms of Australian trademark market share. Moving to the next slide on our legal services. Our litigation and law revenues increased by 7.9% against the prior corresponding period. The Australian court system, which had a few hiccups in the early stages of COVID, has operated fairly well under COVID restrictions, and our caseloads have remained high. Again, our legal team has done an excellent job of working through substantially disrupted and changed conditions to deliver this result. And as I said before, DCC law continues to be one of the preeminent law practices in Australia. I want to spend a few minutes talking in a bit more detail on the key investments that we're making on our overall business transformation program. So moving to slide 20. Business transformation is a phrase that gets used a lot these days, not always in ways where its intent and outcomes are clear. We have been asked by some investors, why do you want to transform your business when you're already regarded as one of the preeminent firms in the industry? And our response has been, it's precisely because of this strength of reputation that we believe this is important. Our businesses have always been innovative and have had a reputation for such. In these times, innovation is happening at a faster pace than ever. And companies that are stuck on legacy platforms, no matter how effective they may have been in the past, will get trapped. We want to be completely transparent about what transformation means to us, and we'll continue to refine our overall narrative as well as to share our plans in as much detail as necessary to help investors understand the importance of this initiative and the progress that we're making with it. This slide sets out the five key areas in which we are investing across the business. And these are people, technology, process, growth and scale, and clients. As you can see, each of these areas has very specific initiative and investments that are being undertaken in order to, in many cases, dramatically improve the ways in which we operate. We're putting in place measures across each of these dimensions to track our progress. We will share that progress along the way with investors, who will also see it show up in our financial results. We're very pleased with the progress that we've made over the past year in setting the foundations for this program. We move to slide 22. This is just a quick reminder of the high-level business case around transformation, which was approved by our board last August, September. We shared these at our full-year results presentation last August, and we're restating them here as a reminder. The key parameters are the $8 to $10 million investment over the next 2 to 3 years, $4 to $6 million per annum in recurring benefits. Those financial benefits will start to flow in FY22, so next year, ramping up to year three with a payback within 2 to 3 years. We're already starting to see some productivity and workplace benefits from the investments that we've made to date. The benefits will be delivered across a number of areas, including increased productivity, increased revenue and margins, deeper client collaboration, and importantly, an ability to quickly integrate acquisitions and drive greater value. Just as important are some of the non-financial benefits. We believe this program will deliver us a sustainable competitive advantage. In technology, all innovation is taking place within the cloud. As a result of these investments, coupled with the insight, talent, and capability of our people, and building on the cultural foundations of excellence in client service delivery, Quantum will be at the forefront of industry innovation. We move to slide 22 on our people and culture. Just as critical as our technology investments will be the ongoing focus on our people and our culture. We talk about this a lot, and it's self-evident that in any professional services firm, people are your most critical asset. We want to be the number one place that IP professionals want to work. We think we do a pretty good job already in supporting our people and investing in our culture. However, COVID has proven that you can never rest on your laurels in any area of your business, especially when it comes to your people. As I've said in earlier presentations, we've undertaken a huge number of initiatives, large and small, over the past 12 months in terms of investing in our people. It starts with the fundamentals, such as diversity and inclusion. We're continuing to focus on ensuring diversity across all levels within the business. We're making progress, and there's more that we can do. We have a very diverse workforce across the board in terms of gender, nationality, age, religion, and so on. And we've done a great job of promoting women through the ranks over the past several years. And we can and will continue to improve on this, especially when it comes to promotion to principal. Over the past year, we have substantially increased our emphasis upon well-being, health, including mental health, flexibility, and learning and development. We implemented a paid pandemic leave program for people that needed it, especially during lockdown. I want to emphasise again our focus on workplace flexibility. We see this as a critical point in attracting and retaining talent, regardless of geography and workplace location. Above all else, it's a mindset. Why would one assume that the best people are only available to work in the CBDs of Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, or Singapore? If COVID has shown us anything, it is that flexibility and adaptability are critical to success. Again, I want to thank our people, especially our people and culture leaders, who've taken the lead on raising our game across the board in this critical area. On the back of this continued program of work, we're very pleased to have been selected as a finalist in the Australian Financial Review Boss Magazine's Best Places to Work, the results of which will be published in April. This is the first time we've participated, and we're thrilled to have been listed alongside many other outstanding Australian companies. Moving to slide 23 on mergers and acquisitions, As I said previously, we hired a head of M&A and risk in May of last year, Morgan Sloper. Morgan has extensive IP industry experience, both as an IP attorney as well as an in-house counsel, along with extensive experience in corporate transactions. Morgan's done a great job in sharpening our M&A strategy, as well as helping to add further opportunities to and building momentum in our pipeline of opportunities. We're looking at a range of opportunities across three horizons. Horizon one is existing business expansion and growth with logical add-on opportunities. Horizon two is about adjacent and complementary services. And Horizon three is about step-out and transformative business opportunities. Any acquisitions in the near term would be done within our existing funding capacity and would be earnings accretive. We're making great progress, and we would hope to be able to successfully convert one to two opportunities over the next year or so. Of course, these would only take place if they met all of our selection criteria, which have been well fleshed out as part of our overall M&A strategy. So moving on to our final slide on page 25. It's been a very promising start to the year in shifting and complex business conditions. Our business model is continuing to serve us well with revenue growth, earnings growth, and continued strong cash flows. We're making solid progress on our range of strategic investments, all of which will have a positive impact on our business in the next years to come. What do we see looking forward? We expect there to continue to be some broad market turbulence and some volatility around both FX and COVID. Hopefully, as vaccine programs start to build momentum around the world, we'll start to see a return to GDP growth in key economies. We'll continue to monitor market conditions and respond accordingly. And as I said at the outset, pleasingly, our board has agreed to pay an interim dividend of 4 cents per share, fully franked, to be paid on the 31st of March 2021 to shareholders that are on the register as at the 4th of March 2021. This is a 21% increase on the prior corresponding period and represents a payout at 82% of our usual range of 70 to 90%. With that, I'll pause and hand back to Miles, and we're happy to take any questions.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin that question and answer session. So once again, if you did wish to ask a question, you can just press star one on your telephone and then just wait for your name to be announced. And if at any time you do need to cancel your request, it's just by pressing the pound or hash key. But once again, that's star one to ask a question. Just a final reminder, star one to ask a question. Okay, we appear to have no questions at this time, so I might hand it back for you now.
Great. Thank you, Miles. It's a busy reporting day today, so thank you all for your time and appreciate your engagement. And we look forward to talking to you again at our next juncture.
Oh, sorry, I do apologise. We do have one question. I'll just throw to this question from Daryl, a private investor. Sorry, please ask your question, Daryl.
Yeah, hi guys. First of all, congratulations on the 2021 half-year results, especially during a difficult period. I think that's fantastic. However, as a long-time shareholder of Quantum, I guess one of the main priorities for me is an appreciation in share price. What, if anything, is the board and yourself, Craig, looking at over the next 3 to 6 month period as far as trying to get the share price to move, I guess, north? It seems that at around $1.09 or $1.10, there seems to be resistance in it going any higher than that. Can you just talk regarding the share price in the next 3 to 6 months, how you're going to try and improve that?
Sure. I mean, the simple answer is we don't have any specific initiatives in the next 3 to 6 months to move the share price. I think share price will move. Firstly, I would say we think the company is undervalued at present, substantially, both relative to performance and potential. But that has, has been as a result of decline over the last couple of years. And so it takes a while to turn these things around. I think the reality is quite simply that what the market looks to see over time is progressive periods of positive growth in earnings and EPS growth. And I think if we can demonstrate that, and we're confident that we can and will over the next sort of 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, so it's really around that time horizon rather than the next 3 to 6 months, then we think that the share price will start to move. The work that we're doing across the business, both organically around growth, but also some of the things that I talked about around business transformation, are really all designed to improve both how the business operates, how we deliver services to our clients, what it's like for our people to work here and the tools and technologies that they've got access to. All of those things combined are really aimed at improving the business per se, which then we would expect will improve our earnings as well. And so insofar as the share price is a reflection of EPS growth, that's really what we need to focus on over the next couple of years. I wish we did have a tool, Daryl, that we could simply pull out of the drawer and use to move the share price in the near term, the next 3 to 6 months. But I think the reality is, you know, it takes time, it takes confidence, and takes delivery. I think if we look back over the last two or three periods, you know, we have been delivering pretty consistently, and we just need to continue to focus on that and then deliver the program of strategic initiatives, which we talked about in the last couple of updates, and I've given a little more detail on here today.
Thank you for that.
Thanks for the question.
Okay, we have no further questions at this stage, so sorry, I'll hand back to you now, Craig.
Great, thanks, Miles. That's great. Thanks, Daryl, for the question, and thank you all for your time. And we look forward to talking to you again soon. And for those institutional investors that are on the call, we have meetings with over the next few days. We look forward to talking to you again shortly. Cheers.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference call. Once again, thank you all for participating today, but you may now all disconnect.